The following is a recording of the Sunday morning service of Rangeville Community Church.
Over this last while, our lives have been really disrupted. I've really been impacted by the impact of COVID-19. It's affected so many aspects of our lives, whether it be our social life, whether it be our work life, our economy. This week they announced that for the first time in three decades, Australia's officially gone into recession, indicating the impact it's had there. And the way you read the newspaper has changed, hasn't it? You open whether it's a newspaper, whether it's an online news feed, and you are guaranteed there will be articles about one particular topic, and that's COVID. And whether it's what is the latest cluster, where is the latest cluster, will you catch it again, is there a vaccine, will it work, and can you trust the Russians? These are all the questions that people are asking and what the media is commenting on. But not only has it influenced our lives in all these different ways, it's impacted on our church family significantly as well. For almost half the year, we were live streaming where we couldn't gather here in this place. And all our life groups are meeting on Zoom. Now we're able to be back as life groups in homes, as long as you're only up to 10 people. Otherwise you're back in Zooming or hybrid. And we're able to be here. And it's wonderful to be able to celebrate together while also acknowledging that there are many people who are continuing to live stream, and we're delighted that you can gather with us together as well. We can meet here because we have a COVID-safe plan. And complying with that plan means that there's a whole lot of things that we do differently. And you notice that in the fact of the way your seats are arranged. That's one effect. Today, I mentioned earlier that when you go out to have your hot drinks or cold drinks, you have to be sitting down to share in that. Whereas those of you who are live streaming, you have the advantage. You can either sit or stand when you drink. One of the areas that this impacts on in terms of COVID safe plan and the whole food and drink area is around sharing communion. And it impacts us in the way that we might share communion. And we haven't done that for a long time. That's right. And so this morning we're going to talk a little bit about this whole area of gathering around tables, around the Lord's table and what that means. Some of the reasons that communion is difficult to share together aren't just rules around food and drink and social distancing. One of the things that's been important to us as Rangeville, as a church family, is to share communion as families. And so typically we've always had families together and share communion, then the children go out to Nitron Cubby. But at the moment, children are in Nitron Cubby for the whole of the service, and therefore we can't share communion as families. There are those who are online, and clearly they can't share communion with us here either. For some people, they're online because they are distant geographically or for reasons of ill health. And yet we believe that sharing communion is something that's really, really important. So this morning we're going to talk about ways that we can do this in meaningful ways. Now, what I'm not going to do is answer all your questions around the theology of communion, the scriptural basis of communion, etc. If you would like that, I have prepared a separate document, which you will come up on our website later today. It goes through the whole background around sharing communion, our position statement, in other words, our theological position on communion, what that means in terms of looking back, looking forward, and it's got information on how to share communion. As a family, as a gathering, a life group, as an individual. And a little later today, that will come up on our Rangeville website, rangeville.com. And if you click on the sermons link, you can download this document or watch the service again or listen to a recording. But first of all, I want to start by looking at this aspect of gathering around tables and what that actually means. You see, Jesus grew up as a Jew in the nation of Israel. And back then, and still today, a defining part of the Middle Eastern culture is that of hospitality. It's that of sitting around a table. It's about inviting people into your homes and enjoying food. And so when we look at Jesus, a lot of what he did in his ministry, as it's recorded, involved sitting around tables and eating, usually in homes. And we see this from the very start of his ministry. And so what we find is that even when Jesus went to gather his first disciples to him, in Mark chapter 1, it talks about James and John go with Jesus to the home of Andrew and Peter. And there they find that Peter's mother-in-law is unwell, so Jesus heals her, and then they sit down and have a meal together. So at the very beginning, as Jesus starts gathering his disciples, it involves spending time together over a meal. If we want to see how much food and gathering together in homes plays a part in the ministry of Jesus, a really great place to look is through the Gospels. And so this last week, I've spent time going through the Gospels and looking at all of these occasions where Jesus just sits together with others to share food as he ministers. And Luke's gospel is a standout here because Luke really addresses this issue so much. I think Luke might have been a foodie. You know what foodies are? Yeah? Okay, people who just love food, love to talk about food, love to photograph food, love to do all sorts of things with food. I think Luke's a foodie because he just addresses this issue of food so much within his gospel. You don't notice it until you go looking for it. And so that's what I did this week. I was looking for it. And so let me share a little bit of what I found. In Luke chapter 5, we see that there is Jesus, and he meets Matthew, who is a tax collector. And he says to Matthew, come follow me. Matthew does that. But what he also does is he gathers together all his other tax collecting friends and people who are rather unpopular in society. And he gathers all of them and says, come back to my place. We're going to have a meal together. And Jesus comes with them. And they have this time together where Jesus is obviously ministering to Matthew and these others. And he seems to be really happy to have a meal with sinners. On the other hand, it seems that the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the time, were very upset with him for doing that. So that's in Luke 5. In Luke 7, we find the tables are turned. And now, Jesus is in the home of a Pharisee. And so, he's gone from the Pharisees being upset with him because he's eating with sinners, to now in Luke chapter 7, he's in the home of a Pharisee having a meal. But then it gets really messy. Because this woman of some disrepute comes in to the meal table and then breaks this jar of perfume over the feet of Jesus and anoints him with perfume. I imagine that Pharisee suddenly went to a state of severe indigestion. Suddenly, what's going on here? So that's Luke chapter 7. In Luke chapter 9, we now find that Jesus is actually the host. And on this occasion, he has been teaching a large crowd of people. And he sees that they are hungry. And so he takes loaves and fishes. He gives thanks. He breaks them and distributes them and feeds 5,000 men plus women and children. In the next chapter, we see going from feeding the multitudes back into a much more homely setting. Luke chapter 10. And here we see Jesus having a meal with his very close friends, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. This is a story that's very well known because we know that Mary sits at the feet of Jesus and listens to him, whereas Martha, what's she doing? She's busy getting the meal ready and getting flustered in getting the meal ready and wanting to know why Mary's not there helping her. And so we learn so much here about Mary and Martha and what it means to worship Jesus and to sit at his feet. In Luke chapter 14, again we discover Jesus is in the home of a Pharisee. In fact, it makes a point here that he's in the home of a prominent Pharisee. And while he's in that home, he takes the opportunity to heal someone who's there. And then because they're sitting around a table and eating, what's he do? He starts telling stories. He starts telling parables. And what are the parables about? They're about feasts. They're about where do you sit? Are you at the head of the table or are you at the foot of the table? What's it mean to come together and eat together? So that's Luke chapter 14. Are you getting a picture here? that there's all these stories here about Jesus and food, but we're only halfway there because we get to Luke chapter 15, and here Jesus tells the story of a son who has taken the father's inheritance, gone to a faraway nation, squandered all his wealth, decides to come home to his loving father. What's his father do? Creates a feast. He puts food on the table and says to the son, come on in. And so now we see there's this situation where Jesus tells this story about the son who is wayward, who comes in and shares in the feast, and the older brother who says, I'm not coming in there, because of this dispute between the two brothers. We get to Luke chapter 19, and here we see Jesus goes into another tax collector's house for a meal. This time it's a very short man called Zacchaeus. Do you see this picture now where Jesus is actually going into the home? So far in Luke's gospel, we've seen he's gone into the home of two tax collectors for a meal. That would have made him very unpopular. On the other hand, we've already seen he's gone into the home of two Pharisees for meals. I think Luke's trying to play off sort of this aspect around those that society was rejecting versus those in society that were the religious leaders that didn't always have their heart in the right place. And so then we get to Luke chapter 22. And in Luke chapter 22, we see that Jesus and his disciples gather together for a very, very significant meal. It's their last meal before Jesus is crucified. It's the Passover. And so in that place, they gather and share something very significant. We'll come back to that in a little bit later. But it doesn't end there. Jesus is crucified, died, buried, resurrected. Jesus is alive. And he comes back from the dead to be with his disciples, and they're all worried it's a ghost. So how does he prove it's not? He eats something. He says, give me something to eat. And they find some fish. And he sits and he eats with them. See, Luke here is just telling all these stories around Jesus gathering in a home in most places, and sharing food. It's a place where he ministers. Now let me cut across for a moment, across to John's gospel, because Peter, one of his disciples, had betrayed him. He denied that he knew Jesus. And how does Jesus restore him? By sitting around eating fish. His restoration of Peter once again involves a meal. You're getting this picture? Jesus does a lot of his ministry with food. Does a lot of his ministry around the table. So much of what Luke particularly is recording here involves Jesus teaching over a meal. It involves Jesus telling parables about meals. We see situations where Jesus is blessed while at a meal, when a woman comes in and anoints his feet. We see situations where Jesus blesses others and heals them as they share a meal. The meal table is a really central place for the ministry of Jesus Christ. Have you ever noticed some people like to photograph food and then post it on social media? Hands up if that's you. Yes. Okay, there's a number of you that do that. And sometimes it's just arranged beautifully. It's a work of art. Sometimes it's just way too healthy. That is a plate of broccoli. On the other hand, sometimes it's decadent. I want you to choose which one of those three you'd like. If Luke was alive today, I wonder if he'd have been photographing the food. Because he keeps talking about it. He keeps telling stories about it. I think Luke was a foodie. But much more than Luke and his passion with meal times, I think it's his passion about the meal table as a place of community, as a place of conversation. Because he realises that meals are a place of relationship. Gathering in homes and around the table is a really central part of his ministry. Now, the question we can ask here is, was this particular to the time of Jesus? Was this particular to the Middle Eastern culture? Or does it still apply to us today? Well, let's answer this in two parts. First of all, does it still happen today? Well, if we look at Middle Eastern hospitality, it hasn't lessened over the last 2,000 years. People from the Middle East are incredibly hospitable. They love to still gather together and have meals to invite people in. There was a major survey done a few years ago that looked at the most hospitable people groups in the world. Do you know which nation was considered the most generous and hospitable to strangers, often inviting people into their homes? The nation of Iraq. A nation that has gone through incredible war in the last few years. A nation where ISIS has caused havoc in that nation. And yet 8 out of 10 Iraqi people continue to show hospitality to strangers, often inviting them into their homes. So it's not just something that was Middle Eastern culture 2,000 years ago that we're talking about. We're talking about Middle Eastern culture still today. But the reality is that hospitality, sharing a meal, transcends nationalities and people groups. The truth is that gathering together around tables is far beyond a national culture. It's a way to build community. It's a way to get to know people. When I worked at the university, I was part of a research team. We had an amazing team, really productive, a lot of fun, and working really, really well together. And one of the reasons it was so productive was that everyone did work together really, really well. So when it came to recruitment, the typical recruitment pathway was that you got people to fill out the selection criteria, and then you'd all sit in a room as a selection committee, interview committee, and you would go through all of the responses to key selection criteria, you'd rank them, then you'd invite them in and you would have to interview them all. I actually was able to negotiate with HR that we could do things a little different. We could do something else. And that was, when we finished all of that process, we took them all out for afternoon tea with my team. And so the research team and the applicants actually spent time together because we learned a whole lot more over a cup of tea and a piece of cake. It was a little bit more than that. But we learned so much more in just having that time of food together than we did just in a room in a formal interview. Does that make sense? You see, Jesus did that. When he wanted to gather his disciples together, what did he do? He shared a meal in a home. When he wanted to minister to others, what did he do? He did that in homes. When they were celebrating feasts and festivals, meals are an incredibly important place and time and way to get to know people, to create community, and to build community. And this isn't something that was just in the Gospels. When we go beyond the Gospels and we look into other places in Scripture, we come to a passage like this one in Hebrews 13 that says, "Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it." This is something that the writer of Hebrews is wanting us to do, and that is express hospitality. Also here reminding us that this goes right back to the time of Abraham, when Abraham was at home and he sees some strangers come. And when they come, he says, just wait. I'll get my wife to bake some bread. I will go and kill a fattened calf, and we're going to have a meal together. Now, that takes time. That wasn't a case of quickly go check what's in the cupboard. This was a significant process that they went through in order to offer very generous hospitality to strangers. But not only does the writer of Hebrews say this, so too does Paul in Romans. Paul's very straight to the point. Two words, practice hospitality. On the other hand, I think Peter thought Paul was a bit too blunt, and so he adds it a little bit more. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. He wanted them to actually practice this in a way that was really positive, without concern. So it seems, though, that from this early church time, Christians were being strongly encouraged to offer hospitality and sharing with one another over meals. Now, earlier I mentioned that Luke seemed to have this love for food. One of the challenges that our generation faces has developed through this whole fascination in cooking shows. Whether it be Master Chef, My Kitchen Rules, Chef's Table, Plate of Origin, whatever your favourite food show is, if you have one, then one of the challenges is that we've created a generation that thinks, well, I have to cook it just right. I have to plate it just right. I have to have the right drinks to go with it, to bring out all the nuances of flavour. For those who love that, I encourage you, celebrate that. Celebrate it and invite people into your home that they too can celebrate that. But the challenge is that some people think, if I can't do all of that, then can I invite guests into my home? It's really important to know that whether it be a simple meal, whether it be simply a cup of tea and a piece of cake around a table, it's the conversation that counts. It's what you talk about, it's what you share in that time. And if you're concerned about having someone in your home, then go out to a coffee shop and have coffee around a table there, to find time to sit and chat, because it's the chat that actually matters. We discover this in the early church. In Acts chapter 2, it says this: they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Then it goes on and says, and they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favour of all the people. Earlier this year, back in June, I spoke about a Jewish custom called the Hamotzi. The Hamotzi is the breaking of bread. And so at a meal where the Jews would gather, whenever they would eat bread, they would break it and they would thank God. And they would thank God that they had bread, that they had been blessed to have food. And for early Christians, this breaking of Hamotzi was something that was part of their culture, it was part of their custom. We see that Jesus practiced the Hamotzi. We see, as we go through the book of Acts, we see there are occasions where Paul practiced the Hamotzi as separate from communion, because there are times, like on a ship, where they're in the middle of a storm and he breaks bread among all these other people and invites people to take part in it. Because there's a whole lot of non-Christians there, we know that it's not communion, it's obviously this sharing of bread. It's the Hamotzi. But then for early Christians, there's this extension of the Hamotzi, based also on what Jesus did at the last Passover before his crucifixion. For this new community of believers in Jesus Christ, his life, his death, his resurrection was what brought them together. It was the very foundation, the basis of their faith. And so they wanted to give thanks to Jesus for what he had done in giving them life. And so they would break bread. Yes, that's part of their Jewish culture. But then they took what Jesus had also done during that Passover feast. Instead of now only celebrating that once a year, they've seen what Jesus has done and they're sharing that in their homes regularly. They're thanking God for food for life. They're also thanking Jesus, who died to give them eternal life. You see, their times of fellowship were often involving meals. And it says here in Acts 2, it was in their homes. They were eating gladly. They were eating together with a sincere faith in Jesus Christ, with praise to God for all that he had done to give them life. And they enjoyed it. They were praising God, and they enjoyed the favour of all the people. See, it seems that joy here is in the very fabric of this Christ-centered community or early church. And so at the time of these early believers, as we read through Acts chapter 2, is that we see that they would go to the temple where they would receive teaching and where they would witness. But then they went to homes of believers where they would share together in a meal, where they would break bread and share communion. And this is what happened for the first 300 years or so of the Christian church. Because it wasn't until the 4th century that they actually started to build church buildings. Until then, communion was shared in the home. So during this time where there are restrictions as a result of COVID-19, and those restrictions impact our gatherings, we are encouraging people to reflect back on the practices of the first 300 years of the early church. and to encourage people to gather and share in ministry in homes, just as Jesus did and just as the early church did. We believe it's appropriate now to be saying to people, rediscover or discover afresh or continue to practice ministry in homes, including communion, just like Jesus did with the very first communion. It was in an upper room in a home, just like the early Christians did when they broke bread in each other's homes. Now, I know that some of you are already taking communion regularly in your own homes, and that's wonderful. For others, because of their church teaching, because of their church traditions or understandings, they may have felt that you don't have permission to do that, or that you need an ordained minister to come and lead or facilitate communion. I want to share with you a story of something that happened within our church about 4 years ago. It was April 2016, and we had community building nights. This was a night once a month where we were bringing together our ministry leaders and our life group leaders, and we would spend time in teaching and encouragement and stories. And on that particular night, I was teaching on the significance of communion. And we're looking at the scriptural foundation of what communion is and why we should share that. And then we also talked about the ways to share communion. Some of that is included in this document here that'll be on our website later today. And we encourage life group leaders to consider leading communion in their life groups when and as they felt appropriate. So about a month after this, a member of our church who was in a life group woke one morning and really felt that as a life group they should share communion together that day. And so she rang the life group leader and said, this is what I'm thinking and feeling. What do you think? And if you think it is of God, would you be willing to lead it? And so they prayed about that and felt, yes, that was the right thing to do. And so that afternoon as they met as a life group, they shared communion together. It was a really significant time for a group of people that had walked through some pretty challenging seasons of life. The reason it was so significant in this particular case is that a few days after that, one of those people in the life group who had cancer deteriorated very quickly, went into hospital, and very shortly after that passed away. The last time that life group met as that group, what was the thing they did? They shared communion together. For them, it was one of the most significant things that they could have done together as they shared life. I think one of the beautiful things of that is that that life group knew that they had permission, that they were encouraged to do something like communion that in the end became such a significant event for them as they gathered that time. That's what ministry in the home is about. You know, just as Jesus did ministry in homes, as he led communion that first time in a home, we're encouraging you to do this. As elders, as we talked and prayed through this, we felt that it was really important that we likewise say, would you please prayerfully consider what it means for you to share communion in homes. Communion, sometimes known as the Lord's table, sometimes known as the Father's table, Eucharist, communion, there's a whole lot of names that are used for this. What is it? Let me take a moment and say that communion involves looking back. It means looking back and reflecting on the incredible love of God. The love of a Father, so great that when we sinned, when we did the wrong thing, he wanted to see a relationship with us restored. And he wanted that so much that he gave his own son. His own son who came and lived on earth, experienced life as we experience it, went through the challenges that we go through, but was without sin. Had done nothing wrong, and then gave his life up on the cross to die for us. And in doing so, completely broke the power of sin. Completely broke the power of sin. Communion is a time where we look back at the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's a time where we remember what he's done in defeating the power of sin. It's also a time in our fast-paced world where we stop. Communion is a time to stop and reflect. And to reflect on the things where we may have done the wrong thing. We've said the wrong thing, done the wrong thing, or haven't said the right thing. We haven't done the right thing. And we stop and we confess that. We say, God, I'm sorry for the things I've done wrong. And then would you please forgive me? And in that place of forgiveness, it's a time for us where we're reflecting on the fact that we are forgiven because what Jesus did. And we are forgiven and our relationship with God the Father is restored. We are his children, we are his sons, we are his daughters. So not only is it a time of looking back, not only is it a time of living in the moment, of reflecting on forgiveness and restoration of relationship with God, it's a time of looking forward. Because it also says in Scripture that we should continue to do this until he comes again. So in other words, we're continuing to reflect on the fact that that Jesus is coming again. He's coming again and we share in communion. And we continue to do that until he comes again. And so as you reflect on communion, I encourage you to prayerfully consider when and how you might share communion in your homes. Now, let's talk practical things for just a moment. Some things to think about, to prepare. It's useful to go and buy some juice. Doesn't have to be grape juice. And some people might want to have a good drink of juice when they have communion, and so they're going to buy it in a great big bottle. For others, they're going, hang on, if I buy a bottle that big, you know, is it going to go off before I get to use it again next time and all of that? Consider buying just a popper. Buy a pack of poppers, keep it in the cupboard, and then when you want to share communion, you just open a popper and you can reseal it and continue to use it over a number of days if you share communion regularly or from a time to time. You can use bread, you can use crackers, gluten-free products. You can make your own. I know people who make their own. And so for those of you who live alone, share communion between just you and God. It's really private. It's really personal. It can be really, really powerful. For those of you who are in life groups, we're encouraging you that share communion as a life group on a regular basis. So in this time when we're not sharing it here on a Sunday morning, encourage you to consider whether or not you want to share it on a monthly basis in your life group or as the Lord leads you. There may be times where, just as I told that story of a few years ago, where you just feel an incredible sense of this is what God's calling us to do in this time. But I also encourage families to consider gathering for a meal and sharing communion as a family, either before the meal or after the meal. Make it a really memorable time. Make it a fun time. Explain to your family what it means and why you're stopping and reflecting on the things you've done wrong, why you're asking for forgiveness. What is this grape juice? What is this bread? And so helping the family to understand that and then sharing in that on a regular basis. Consider inviting another person over or another family over and sharing together as a family or families, which is exactly what's described in Acts chapter 2. That's what they did in Acts chapter 2. So as I said earlier, a detailed explanation around the whole scriptural basis and theology of communion, etc., is going to be up on the website later today, as well as information on, if you like, some of the liturgy, if you like to use liturgy, on how to share communion. Communion is very sacred. It's very, very special. It can be solemn. It can be celebratory. But I encourage each of you to pray and to ask the Lord when and how to share communion. Prepare and be ready to do that as the Lord leads you. And I'm really looking forward to hearing stories and testimonies of when you have shared communion and sharing that it might be a blessing to others as well. So don't hesitate to share those stories and testimonies. So as we wrap up this morning, I want you to take a moment now and just reflect on sharing communion. What it means to you, but also if you were to share it either by yourself, when might you do that? Or if you're wanting to do this as a family, what are some steps you would take to share communion as a family, if you want to invite another family or as your life group, take a moment now and just reflect. What would that mean? And what would you need to do in order to be ready to do that? So what's God saying? And what will I do?
That concludes our sermon recording. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or require further information, please contact our church office on 0746 361 144, or you can email us office@rangeville.com.